Blog Talk Radio.
This is an Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash production. Thank you for stopping into another fantabulous episode of the Take It Easy radio show, live here on Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash, and live here on YouTube. What is up, everybody? I hope you are having amazing, fantabulous day here on this Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, or whenever it is that you're stopping into the show. My name is Kyle, and we have a great, great show planned for you here today. We are going to be joined by a friend of ours, the Brickyard Podcast, hopefully here within the next hour, to talk some NFL draft, recap, and just break things down a little bit. And so we'll be getting to that throughout the show today. We also got a couple interesting stories that will tease in and out here. And we'll see how things end up going about. So this is going to be a different format of the show, but we start the way we usually do, which is talking about games of the day that are on. And one of the ways that we do this is, you know, to introduce the show. It's usually around baseball. Sometimes back when the basketball tournament was going on, or not the basketball tournament, the NBA bubble, we had some actual live basketball to talk about, and so we got to that. But today, we have leg two of the UEFA Champions League semifinal going on across the pond in Europe as Chelsea plays Real Madrid. They're currently at halftime, and I can't even bootleg this game because most of the bootleg websites don't even carry soccer. So we've got Chelsea versus Real Madrid competing for the final spot in the UEFA Champions League final. Right now, Chelsea is up 1-0 on Real Madrid, but note when they played the first time, they had a 1-1 draw on Madrid's home pitch, which means that if they end in a tie, it goes to aggregate goals. And so goals on the road determine who advances to the Champions League final. And so the only way Chelsea loses now is a 2-2 draw they would lose, or if Chelsea walks out, because they're the home team in this match. The first time they played, it was 1-1. Real Madrid was at home, so Chelsea scored one goal on the road. Got it. So it's 1-1. Chelsea's up 1-0 right now. So say the game ends in a 1-1 tie as they start the second half. If the game ends in a 1-1 tie, and we'll know the result by the end of this, or unless they go to penalty kicks, if it ends in a 1-1 tie, I believe they go to extra time or penalty kicks. I'm not 100% sure. If it ends in a 2-2 tie, then Real Madrid advances because they would have scored two goals on the road, and Chelsea will have scored one goal on the road. And so that's how Real Madrid advances to play Manchester City in the Champions League final, I think next week maybe, I don't know. But if Chelsea wins by one or more goals, Chelsea advances. This is only for a tie-breaking scenario, and they happen to tie the first time they played. So in aggregate, Chelsea is winning 2-1 45 minutes left to play. If it's 2-2, they go to ties. If Chelsea wins 3-2, or I'm sorry, if Chelsea wins 3-2, they win the match. But if they go full aggregate and it's tied 2-2, Chelsea loses. If they go to aggregate and it's a tie, Real Madrid will advance. It's weird how soccer works like that, but maybe America could adopt some sort of similar type model. Might be a little bit interesting to watch, to be honest. Could be kind of, you know, a fun little teaser here and there. So while we await on our good friend, the Brickyard Podcast, to join us later on in the show, I want to start off by talking about some weird breaking news that I saw that I found interesting, and maybe other people don't find it as interesting, but I found it rather interesting, was hockey. And hockey may not be interesting, but what if I told you it was James Dolan? Would that get you excited? So the New York Rangers, we need some backstory on this. The New York Rangers are James Dolan's franchise that he actually treats pretty well. Like, he does pretty good running the New York Rangers. People generally applaud him for his decisions there in that comparison, in direct contrast to the New York Knicks, who people think for 20 years James Dolan's ownership has run the franchise into the ground. There is some irrefutable evidence that suggests this, and it's such for a lot of owners, more specifically in football, but also exists in basketball, where if you're guaranteed to make money and your prerogative is to make money, then what is your incentive to change the way that you do business? If the way you do it right now is successful, and to the Knicks, no matter how bad the product is, they always turn in a huge profit, as the case of the New York Rangers, because they own Madison Square Garden, they own the TV network, at least in the case of the Knicks, they own the TV network in which they broadcast on. I think for the Rangers, too, I think they're both on the MSNBC one, but or not MSNBC, Sportsnet New York or whatever. But anyways, they own the TV contracts, they own the building, and they always make money because the games are almost always sellouts. So what's your incentive to change your course of action if what you're doing is highly successful in achieving your goals of making money? Well, there's not much, and that's why James Dolan can go 20 years, where apart from a magical 2 months with Amari Stoudemire and 10 days with Jeremy Lin, that the New York Knicks have been pretty irrelevant my entire lifetime, at the very least. We can count all of those together for my entire lifetime. But what is interesting is that the New York Knicks have gotten good all of a sudden, and they look competent now with, you know, World Wide West and Leon Rose and Tom Thibodeau running the New York Knicks. They look fairly competent at this point. And so the Knicks have turned it around. And on the NHL side, the New York Rangers have gotten their ship turned around a little bit, because last year post-pandemic, so let's start post-pandemic, the New York Rangers were the ninth seed. I might be incorrect here. The New York Rangers were either the 9th, 11th, or 12th in the NHL bubble bracket last year. And so the New York Rangers had to play a first-round matchup against – in the NHL bubble, the New York Rangers had to play a first-round matchup against – I want to say they played wasn't the Islanders. They played against Florida. I want to say it was against Carolina, but I'm not 100% sure. Yes, they played the Carolina Hurricanes. As the number 11 seed, they played the Carolina Hurricanes in the NHL playoff bubble. And the New York Rangers got bounced almost immediately. Like, I think they lost pretty quickly in that bubble. Like, it was bad for the New York Rangers. And they were one of the eight teams that got bounced from the bubble but didn't technically make the playoffs. They lost in the play-in round. So they technically didn't make it to the playoffs. They lost in the play-in round. But something strange happened in the NHL lobby, where those eight play-in teams all ended up competing for the number one pick in the draft, because when they did the draft lottery, because they didn't know the eight teams in the bubble, they just put them all together and all their odds into one ping pong ball that basically said, or one combination of codes, because that's the way you do the lottery, they did this weird thing where they said, hey, there's all of these odds combined together, which I think made them the most likely team to get the number one pick. They just combined all the odds together of the eight teams that were still playing in the bubble, and they said those eight teams can have the top odds at landing the number one pick in the lottery, but only one of the eight teams is going to have an equal chance of getting that pick. And so the New York Rangers ended up getting the number one pick after the combination of eight landed the number one pick in the first lottery. Then they had to do a second lottery after the round ended where the eight teams in there had to go through the lottery system, one in eight chance, draw the ping pong ball out of the machine, and people attest that there was a weighted ball, but I think only the NBA rigged their lotteries, wink, wink. They attest as like a weighted ball that helped the New York Rangers get picked out of the chute because the NHL wanted the New York Rangers to get the number one pick in the draft and get this guy Panarin, I want to say. Panarin is how you pronounce his name, if I recall correctly. And the New York Rangers got that number one pick. They got Panarin, Henrik Lundqvist, their star player for a long time retired. So that's the cool backstory behind it. They just got the number one pick in last year's draft. After making the play-in round, so they were between 17 and 24 the year before. So it's like if, for example, in the NBA, like the San Antonio Spurs had gotten the number one pick in the draft last year. Like they had the 11th best odds, and they ended up netting the number one pick in the draft. That's kind of the equivalent of what we're talking about here, is the miraculous scenario where the San Antonio Spurs get the number one pick in the draft. And so they get this Panarin guy, and Panarin is awesome. Immediately the best player on the ice. He was a generational prospect. Awesome. Looks like he's going to win MVPs years down the road. Like, not far off. Like, 25-year-old MVP. Looks totally awesome. Best player immediately on the Rangers. Makes them immediately better. And the front office, from what I've recalled, has done a pretty good job of building this thing out for the Rangers. And then chaos ensues because the Rangers find themselves on the outside looking in, because they rearranged the divisions, and so the Rangers get put in the East region with most of the teams that were already in their division, to be honest. Like, NHL divisions are very weird, but there are a lot of teams that were in the same division as the New York Rangers. The Islanders, the Bruins, the Capitals, the Penguins, Los Pingüinos, the Flyers, the Devils. Like, a lot of these teams are in the same division as the Pittsburgh Penguins, but they had to move some stuff around because all the Canadian teams are playing in the same division. So all of this is to say that the New York Rangers got kind of a tough draw because they were in a division with the Penguins, who are very clearly like the best team in the NHL, the Boston Bruins, who are very clearly a really good team, made it. They were one of the two best teams last year. Them and the Lightning, two best teams in hockey, no question. Washington Capitals, always really good, still have Alex Ovechkin. New York Islanders made it to the conference finals last year, and the Philadelphia Flyers had the number one overall seed last year. So they just got a really shitty draw going through the NHL re-division aligning. And although they did better than the Flyers, who kind of fell off, the Rangers are going to miss the playoffs. And in the last two games of the regular season, this guy named Tom Wilson, if you don't know anything about Tom Wilson, and I only know a little bit about Tom Wilson, he's the Draymond of hockey, is the best way to put it. Just universally not liked, but it's not quite Draymond because hockey has, like, goons and guys who, like, actually get physical and stuff, so it's a little different game in hockey. And so these big, physical, tough guys all of a sudden come into the fold of things, and they knock dudes on their asses. And Tom Wilson's been suspended a lot. It's kind of this interesting backstory, yada, yada, yada. So basically lays out this dude, or hits him in the back of the head after he'd already been hurt before that, puts him out for the last two games of the season. The Rangers make this really weird statement. And let me see if I can find the Rangers statement here. Here's the statement from the New York Rangers. Quote, the New York Rangers are extremely disappointed that Capitals forward Tom Wilson was not suspended for his horrifying acts of violence last night at Madison Square Garden. Wilson is a repeat offender with a long history of these types of acts, and we find it shocking that the NHL and their Department of Player Safety failed to take the appropriate action and suspend Wilson indefinitely. Wilson's dangerous and reckless actions caused an injury to Artemi Panarin that will prevent him from playing again this season. We view this as a dereliction of duty by the NHL head of player safety, George Pottos, and believe he's unfit to continue in his current role. And that's a intense statement that we don't really see a lot from NHL people, but you know what, sure, warrants the action, whatever you want to call it. It's just an interesting statement nonetheless. So what we get from the Rangers today is fired the president, fired the GM, which apparently are unrelated to this statement, which reports are that they very much distanced themselves from the statement, but already put the New York Rangers in national headlines, which you know how hard it is to get national headlines in hockey, not just like the ESPN kind. Like, we're talking about the top cable networks like CNN Canada and like CBS Canada. Like, we're talking about big networks talking about this story. And so now they fire their GM and fire their president. Universally bemoaned moves. Like, people are, like, they can't believe that these guys are fired. And people started connecting the dots between statements and the firing of the GM and president, and also connected, like, that would be totally insane, but then made the connection, we've got the James Dolan route on this one, that James Dolan would do some crazy bleep like this, and this would not be an out-of-character type move for someone like James Dolan to make. And so it's really interesting now that everything comes crashing down on the heads of the New York Rangers, even though they just landed the number one pick in the draft, and it looks like coming up pretty soon, they may start to compete again in the NHL once the divisions realign and wild cards return, and they might have a chance to make the playoffs really soon. They're just in the unfortunate position of playing the same division as Pittsburgh and Washington right now, but that'll change up at some point once they, you know, realign and they go back to playing with Boston and I don't know. I forgot what the original NHL, original NHL divisions. Okay, so you've got Tampa, Florida, Florida Panthers, not Tampa, Florida, like the city Tampa, Florida. Tampa, Florida, Toronto, Buffalo, Boston, Ottawa, Montreal, but then you've got, you know, Columbus, Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, the Devils, the Hurricanes, and the two New York teams. Okay, okay. Just had to get that a little bit set in stone. Okay, that makes sense. So they can go back to their original division with, you know, Carolina, Columbus, New Jersey, the Islanders, the Rangers, Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, Washington. Still can't avoid Pittsburgh and Washington, unfortunately, for them, but at least you get to avoid some of those other teams that are there now, like the what's their names? Why am I having a brain fart here? I'm sorry, I had a brain fart there. I need to see the standings. Yeah, it's hard talking about hockey when you only know so much about the sport. But yeah, I only know so much about hockey, and some of it's talking out of my ass on the hockey stuff. But this Rangers story is just absolutely insane over the past few days. And so some people are connecting the dots on James Dolan this morning, which, you know, tough break. James Dolan, it's a weird look and a crazy look and something that I find insane. Another thing that's totally insane is the story with Juwan James, who is the right tackle for the Denver Broncos, who has one of the worst – at this point, he's got one of the worst contracts in the NFL. And my man, Juwan James, was on an off-site workout before OTAs, and he tore his Achilles. And Juwan James may miss the rest of the season for the Denver Broncos, and there was a crazy report that, you know, labor and players were going right after to the idea that Jawan James's $20 million contract could be voided because an injury came off-site, even though he was doing football-related activities, which, you know, seems, if I'm just hearing this story at face value, I'm just like, yo, that's a dick move. Like, the idea that they would do that to that guy, that just seems like kind of a dick move to just mess that guy's money up like that, considering that he tore his Achilles and he's got this giant contract, and it's just a way to circumvent the salary cap and try and avoid this contract. But it's a really tough place for him to be in. And so you look around and you see the Denver Broncos lose their right tackle, and it's like, oh, dang, first big football injury. And then you hear that story, I'm just like, oh, my God, that is, like, brutal. And, like, Patrick Mahomes was coming out and talking about it, and some Broncos players were coming to his defense. Like, I don't think they're going to end up doing it. It would be an ultimate dick move if they did. And you know what? It may be within their ethos to try and circumvent the cap because, like I mentioned off the top, Jawan James has one of the worst contracts in the NFL. Like, just got that big free agent money, and that was just it for his career. And I don't think the torn Achilles is going to help him anymore. So $20 million when the NFL system – think about this, what it takes to get to the NFL. You probably make – to become a professional athlete, you probably make about 25% of your net worth until you reach that first free agent contract. If you are, for example, a star cornerback, and you're coming out of high school. Well, when you're playing high school football, you're not making any money coming out of high school, no matter how top-rated a prospect you are. If you're a five-star recruit, all these schools are coming to you. You're not making money off of your high school play. Then you get to college football. And according to the Drexel University study that I constantly quote, that brings up the great stat that college athletes with their scholarships and their, like, free swag and food and all the stuff that they get provided from the school equates to about 16 cents on the dollar for what they're making for the university. So you're getting paid nothing in high school. It's just an extracurricular activity. You're making 16 cents on the dollar by the time you get to college. Let's say that you are a second-round pick in the NFL draft. Well, the allotted money for second-round picks is about $1.6 million. That's about what the allotted bonus money is for that slot in the draft. Let's see, 42nd pick in NFL draft money. So let's see, NFL draft tracker. So here's how the draft picks are set up. So if you are the 44th pick in the NFL draft, you get total value $7 million at signing, $7 million to be a second-round pick in the NFL draft. So you get $7.8 million total. At signing, you get about $3 million of that, and against the salary cap, you are worth only $1.4 million towards the salary cap. So let's think about that. If you made $160,000, your time in college, you get to the NFL and you are making $2 million a year. So you made $1 million a year, and you could have made $1 million a year in high school if you're, say, a top cornerback, like, I don't know, Jeremy Chinn. Let's say Jeremy Chinn was the 64th pick in the draft last year. Well, if Jeremy Chinn could hit free agent, if Jeremy Chinn could hit free agency right now, I think Jeremy Chinn would be worth roughly $15 million a season. So for the next 3 years, let's say Jeremy Chinn would make $15 million each season, so $45 million total. Well, he's making $2 million total if he's playing with the Panthers on that second-round contract. Jeremy Chinn will make, according to the 64th pick in the draft, he will make $5.5 million over the next few seasons, and he made $1.3 million by signing. He'll make $1 million a year. So Jeremy Chinn gets $1 million a year for being the 64th pick in the draft. So he gets $1 million a year for 4 years. That's $4 million, plus the $160,000 that he got from being in college. That's $4.16 million. If we said Jeremy Chinn was worth $15 million a year for the next 3 years, plus let's say he was worth $10 million last year, plus he's worth $1 million to that university that he played at, so we take $1 million, $10 million, and $315 million. That's $56 million. Jeremy Chinn is worth $56 million. That's not to even include lost wages he could have made coming out of high school, which in the grand scheme of $56 million is not a lot. But if, say, being a high school athlete is the max that you ever get to, or you become a Division I athlete and you don't go pro, well, that's lost wages on the back end in terms of the same percentages of what we're talking about. So in rough math, that would be $56 million Jeremy Chinn would be worth as he hits free agency after year four. And according to this, Jeremy Chinn would be making, let's see, 5.5 plus 160,000. Jeremy Chinn will make 5.8 million of that 56 million, which is just about 11%. So for the first 4 years of a player's career, professional athletes through the first 4 years of your NFL career are making roughly about 11% of what they are worth, which seems totally insane to me, and it's a little outrageous, but about 11% of what your net worth would be is pretty – it sucks. Like, the idea that this is Juwan James's one chance to get paid, because then once you get that contract, you get fair market value. Now, we can argue the logistics of fair market value because the salary cap limits what the market dictates. So it's fair market relative to the salary cap, which is just another way to limit costs, which I understand why sports leagues want to do that. It's a very, very effective strategy. And so you have that situation where you make 10%, 10 to 11%. I mean, I just did the math in my head. 5.8 divided by 56 is about 10.2. So 10.2%, but we can round up and say 11 to be safe. So 11%, and you've made 11% of what you could have made through the first, let's see, 4 years of high school, let's say 3 years of college, and 4 years in the NFL. So 11 years of working professionally or working at this craft that is now your profession. So after 11 years, you've made about 11% of what you could have made. So now at this point, you get your one chance at fair market value. And if you're Juwan James, it was as your body was starting to derail on you and as you were starting to get hurt. And so the average lifespan of an NFL player is like 3.5 years. For those who get a second contract, they very rarely get a third. So that second contract is your one chance to get that money, to get that fair market value and make up for the lost wages of the past. Not all the way through. These guys are very much underpaid no matter what, even if you're Patrick Mahomes. Patrick Mahomes had a lot of lost wages in his past because of contracts, because of guaranteed signings. And that's the other part about this. It's like, you're not going to get to 100%. Like, 100% is not possible. We're going to lose wages here and there. It's just part of the natural cycles of the economy. At least that's what I acknowledge that I have blind spots on this topic. Like, I'm not an expert by any stretch of the imagination, but I assume that we're not going to get 100%. 100% is just a strivable goal to maximize your earning potential. But 11%, we'd argue getting 11 cents on the dollar is certainly very, very low. And so what we are left with in the case of Juwan Jones is that his one big contract is paid out. And yes, you could say, well, what about management? Management signed the contract. Management has to deal with it. And he got hurt training to be football. I'd argue he got hurt training not to be football, that he should still be compensated with the money that he was owed under the contract. But that's also just a pro-labor standpoint. But Juwan James gets his one chance at a contract. He gets it. It's guaranteed money up front, so he's got that. But then once again, even after signing the second contract, he is still losing out on those wages. And he's losing out on those extra wages at every stage of the game. And most people have this anyways, because the other thing I talk about is the shrinking middle class in sports. And this is, again, sports reflect society. This is a big thing that exists all throughout life as well. There's an increasingly shrinking middle class, and it's the reason that America is on extremely rocky economic ground as compared to the rest of the world. So the increasingly shrinking middle class is doing more damage because after those 11 years of making 11 cents on the dollar, what happens if you don't get that big contract? What happens if you don't end up signing that long-term deal like Juwan Jones? What if, for example, you're Philip Lindsay? Philip Lindsay was a restricted free agent with the Denver Broncos, signed a contract with them. They cut Philip Lindsay, and Philip Lindsay's career earnings, I want to say, pivot somewhere around. And again, he had one big 1,000-yard season. Philip Lindsay's career earnings average out to around 3 million so far, and he'll make another $2.25 million coming up next year. So he's made $3 million in his career, and he'll potentially make another $3 million this year. So what happens if you're Philip Lindsay, undrafted guy, made a Pro Bowl his rookie year as an undrafted rookie, and you never get the second contract? Never going to get the second contract, and for all of your labor, if you made 11 cents on the dollar, even though I think he came from Colorado, if I remember correctly, like the CU Bucks. So you've made 11 cents on the dollar, and you made even less because you were on that rookie contract when you went for or you were on that undrafted rookie contract. Sorry, he was on the undrafted rookie contract when he went for, what was it, like 1,200 yards his rookie year for the Broncos? If you're Philip Lindsay, you got like $6 million plus endorsements from the NFL, from strictly NFL money. Philip Lindsay earned roughly $6 million so far. I don't know if he has another contract coming up. It looks like he might be like RB3 for the Texans next year, so maybe he doesn't have another contract coming. But if you're Philip Lindsay, $6 million is probably more than you thought you'd get coming into the game, but Philip Lindsay made a Pro Bowl in 2019. The idea that he's only going to walk away with $6 million from his NFL career is crazy. And it's like making up for lost compensations with big contracts that are bad relative to the cap. But if you're Philip Lindsay or Juwan Jones, like this is your chance to make up for those 11 years of lost wages. Or in the case of Philip Lindsay, I guess that would be what? 4 plus 4 plus 3. So I guess 11. It would be 11 for Philip Lindsay too. So this idea is just really important to focus in on that, hey, some of these guys are making 11 cents on the dollar, and NFL players are labor, and labor making 11 cents on the dollar is definitely exploitation, I think is the safest way to put it. Now, again, this is potential earnings. You're never going to get to 100%, but you know that 11% is way too low, and 100% is an idealized world. And so in the short term, I feel like ideally we should be pushing that closer and closer. And this is how, like, owners and college football monarchs, because that's the best way to put college football monarchs, the concept of shamateurism, is that they basically are like monarchs. This is how they win the game. This is how the system works entirely in their favors, is that if you can control costs at all levels while maximizing revenue, well, then all of a sudden you're going to make insane profits like college sports does and like the NFL does. You turn insane profits by maximizing revenue, minimizing costs. It's why slavery was such an effective form of labor and why in countries they fought civil wars, including in America, over the concept of slavery, is because lower the cost, maximize the revenues, and there you go. It's a very effective form of making money. The problem is you just lower the labor cost down to zero. In football, we deduce just on quick math, it's like 11 cents on the dollar instead of 0 cents on the dollar or whatever it is, 4 cents on the dollar because they provide some sort of housing and some sort of food. So I guess 4 cents on the dollar. And 11 cents on the dollar against potential earnings, It seems like a close gap, especially much larger. I don't want to, like, because 7% of $56 million is a lot. Like, let's not pretend like that's not a lot. That's not a huge gap between 4% and 56, or 4% and 11% of $56 million. Like, if we don't acknowledge that, then it sounds like totally blasphemous and insane. That's like, what, a $4 million gap? So let's not say like the comparison here. I'm not doing the comparison game because we're talking about like a $4 million gap, which is generational wealth and life-changing money. But we can play the game if $4 million is 7% of a $56 million industry, and that industry being the athlete itself is an industry if that athlete is worth $56 million over the course of like 11 years, well, then that athlete becomes an industry. So the industry of the athlete is worth $56 million. Well, then what about the person who is living check to check? And this is where sports reflect society. What about the person living check to check who is closer to that 4% threshold than that 11% threshold of a $56 million industry, whatever type of industry they're in? The industry is not themselves. Their potential earning is not $56 million because I suppose their skills aren't demanded in the way a football player's $56 million body is worth, but it's really interesting. And again, this is like Jeremy Chin we're talking about. This is not necessarily like LeBron James, who his economy is worth literally billions. Like the economy of LeBron James is worth literally billions of dollars. And so this creates an interesting dynamic about generational wealth and chunks of the pie and how you have to fight for like 1% of a $56 million industry, because 1% is 1% of a $56 million industry is $560,000. And so fighting for those $560,000, just getting 1% of that pie, is a lifetime battle, or at the very least, it's a decade-long battle for a lot of people who don't have the generational wealth to start off with. And this is a real pressing matter that exists all across America, and it's reflected through sports, through athletes who, again, 11% compared to the person living check to check, making 11% of your $56 million economy is great, but it's also just ridiculously low in terms of, like, if you're worth 11% or you're making 11 cents on the dollar, but someone else is making 4 cents on the dollar of what their economy is worth, well, then all of a sudden you're changing the way labor is viewed and the way that a person's work gets viewed. And excuse things in like, hey, why don't we pay low workers more? Why don't we raise minimum wage? Or at the very least, why don't we pay people more than the minimum wage? Why don't we pay people for more than what it's worth? Why don't we raise the cost of labor so that ordinary people can have living wages? And this is the interesting conversation that divides along political lines and economic lines, and everyone has their own biases that play into things. And this is where sports and society intersect, is that you can learn things from sports that are transparent throughout society. And people making 11% of whatever their economy is, yeah, that's probably going to be some sort of sustainability. But if your economy is not a $56 million economy, if you as an economy, you as a person, is not worth $56 million, like Jeremy Chin had been over 11 years of being a star athlete, Division I athlete, past the NFL, and high school five-star recruit. Well, if your skills aren't valued like that, your economy is worth, say, $5 million, which is just a question of how much do you think your potential earnings are over a lifetime? You specifically, how much do you think your potential earnings are across a lifetime? That's where you can start to figure out, you know, numbers and whether or not you are making what you should, or if your potential earnings are going up to a point of sustainability. It's a very interesting idea that you can maybe play the game for yourself. But again, this is where sports reflect society, is that Jeremy Chin's economy is worth $56 million and someone else's might be worth $5 million, $4 million. What do you think your potential earnings are over your entire lifetime? And do you think you're equaling that across your entire lifetime? Because Jeremy Chin for the last 11 years is worth $56 million, and it looks like he's making about $5.8 million of that. And Philip Lindsay's potential earnings as a 1,000-yard running back might be $20 million, $30 million. But he also subtracts the cost from not being a star athlete, still gets his $160,000, even though he's worth $1 million to the University of Colorado, so that's $1 million right there. If he's a top recruit going to Colorado, he's got, you know, potential earnings from high school, not a ton, but he's got some potential earnings there. And then you get to the NFL, 1,000-yard rusher, that could get you top 10 money at the position. Top 10 money at the position is $9 million a season. So $9 million next – $3 million and another $3 million. So Philip Lindsay would be at 21 plus one. So, you know, a little over $22 million. $22 million is Philip Lindsay's potential earnings. And he's going to walk away with $6 million of it over his first 11 years of his football career, going back to high school, going back to college, and going back into his first 3 years of the NFL. Worth about $22 million, and Philip Lindsay's going to cash in on $6 million of that. And that number equates to better than the median we were talking about with 11%, though. Philip Lindsay is 6 divided by 22. That's 4.5, 4.5 times 6, 27%. So Philip Lindsay is going to make 27 cents on the dollar. You know what? Maybe that's a more idealized number to work to, 27 cents on the dollar. And maybe that'll work out well for Philip Lindsay, and maybe that'll work out for Jeremy Chin. But I feel like 27 cents on the dollar is better when compared to 11 cents on the dollar. 27 is pretty good, but it's still not enough. I feel like we should be shooting for something higher than that in terms of potential earnings and being able to earn more along the way for what you're worth. And again, these are kind of arbitrary numbers. Like, a lot of it is just, what do you think a 1,000-yard running back is worth? What do you think a 700-yard running back is worth? What do you think a 500-yard running back is worth? And just placing a value on that. I'm not sure what the numbers are, but we can just use past precedent to decide. Like, if there's 10,000-yard rushers, then that makes you one of the top 10 highest-paid running backs in the NFL. So let's say if Philip Lindsay finished 5th in rushing yards, then Philip Lindsay would be the 5th highest-paid running back. What does the 5th highest-paid running back in the NFL make? Let's see. Highest-paid running backs 2020. 5th highest-paid running back made $12 million. Okay, so we can add 3 more million to what I was saying. So let's say $25 million. 6 divided by 25 is easy. That's 24%. Philip Lindsay made 24 cents on the dollar for his NFL career, or for the first through the first 3 years of his NFL career. So if we count high school, which, again, I throw high school in there, but I guess what you're getting is just practices and game play. If you're getting paid for that, then I guess you could make, you know, $30,000 a year maybe if you were getting paid like a job with the bare minimum wage for practice time and game time instead of just being a recreational activity. If you were getting paid to play football in high school, you could make roughly, you know, $30,000 a year, which is nothing compared to what the NFL numbers are, but it's still something to take into account, is that high school athletes don't get paid. And you could envision a world where maybe they do. If there's money thrown into high school football, maybe they could get some of the numbers from that. Maybe they could have money to support whatever they're doing. I'm not going to say support their families, but I'm just going to say support whatever it is you're doing. If you were to compensate high school athletes for their labor during high school football, maybe that's an idea where if there's money being invested into that and it's a revenue generator for schools, then if it's a few thousand dollar industry, players can make a little bit of money off it. Depends on how big the high school economy is, or the high school sports economy is. It gets complex with non-revenue-generating sports, but this is where the NCAA has their bylaws in Title IX, that if they were to form an NCAA-esque Super League, you could get by those NCAA bylaws and change the game up a little bit. So we're talking about labor, people. We are talking about labor and wages and making 24 cents on the dollar. So that's the interesting conversation. And while we were doing that, Chelsea took a 2-0 lead on Real Madrid. So Chelsea is on their way to the Champions League finals against fellow British club Manchester City, who apparently is like the heavy favorites going into this Champions League final. But hey, couple of British clubs battling it out in the UEFA Champions League final. Chelsea versus Manchester City. All right, all right. Very good, very good. about 15 minutes to go here. We guess we didn't get Brickyard in here, but that's good for you people listening on YouTube, because I would have had to cut out the YouTube feed had we completed this show and our Brickyard boy hadn't pulled up. So we got the full show here today, faithful. Let's talk NBA real quick here. Because I saw this interesting story that Terry Stotts may be planning to be fired. And not only that, the Indiana Pacers may fire Nate Bjorkman at the end of the season after firing Nate McMillan inexplicably at the end of last season. And I find it so fascinating that the Blazers might be ready to move on from Lord Terry Stotts. The Blazers just might be ready to move off of Lord Terry Stotts. And the reason I call him Lord Terry Stotts is because Terry Stotts looks like a member of British Parliament. And so it looks like Bjorkgren is on the hot seat in Indiana, and that the Blazers, barring a deep playoff run, are planning to fire Terry Stotts after like 8 years. And the Blazers one is significant. And here's why the Blazers move is significant. Because Portland, for years, has been the exact same team. And I've been making jokes for years about it, that Portland is just the same team over and over and over again, and that their new coach got a contract for – I'm sorry, their GM got an extension through 2023, and I joked that when he's still there in 2023, it'll still be Dame Lillard and C.J. McCollum getting bounced in the first round of playoffs. And lo and behold, if Terry Stotts gets fired – I think this is a signal that the Blazers are close to going all in. And what do I mean by the Blazers being close to going all in? When Anthony Davis requested his trade from the Pelicans, this is back in 2019 when Davis requested the trade, I said in that very moment, the Portland Trail Blazers need to give up the farm to land Anthony Davis. Give up C.J. McCollum. Give up Yusuf Nurkic. Give up 4 years of draft picks. Give up, I think Zach Collins was a young big guy at the time right then. Give up whatever it takes to get Anthony Davis for a season and a half. Go all in. Try and win the championship with Anthony Davis and with Damian Lillard. And if and when Davis leaves in free agency following 2020, Damian Lillard may request a trade. You may trade Damian Lillard. He may decide to stay and play on terrible teams like Steph Curry is doing for now for Golden State, not ruling out a Steph Curry trade, but for now, Steph Curry remains in Golden State. And what I've been saying for years and years is go all in. Go all in. When James Harden became available, Portland, go all in. Trade everything. Make it happen. Pair Damian Lillard with a second-best player better than C.J. McCollum. Because the Portland Trail Blazers, in their time together with Dame and C.J. McCollum, at least in recent history, have had these finishes over their run of making the playoffs, I think like 8 years in a row or something. 2014 was the year that Damian Lillard drained the buzzer beater against the Rockets that will live forever as like one of the coolest moments I've ever seen. Win that series, get bounced immediately by the San Antonio Spurs. Win 50 games the next season, losing the first round of the Grizzlies. Next year, fifth seed, win 44 games, beat the Clippers in round one. C.J. McCollum won most improved player that year. And then lose to the Warriors without Damian Lillard. He got hurt in that series. Then they play the Warriors in the first round as an 8 seed, bounced immediately. It was just a bad year for them, down year. Next year, number 3 seed, win the division. 3rd seed, lose to the Pelicans by sweep. Anthony Davis swept him out of the playoffs with the playoff Rajon Rondo. Next year, come back. Win the game where Damian Lillard hits the step-back dagger against Paul George and waves goodbye. They're number 3 seed again, just as a side note. So this is their peak, number 3 seed. Beat the Thunder, go 7 games with the Denver Nuggets in one of the best series that I've ever seen. 7 games, C.J. McCollum, heroics, wins game 7, gets to the conference finals, of which they should not have been in because Houston and Golden State should have been the conference finals that year. They just happened to be Golden State 1 seed, Houston 4 seed, for people who don't remember. Make it to the conference finals and lose to the Warriors 4-0. swept out, not even a close series. Kevin Durant didn't even play for the Warriors. They got swept out. And then last year, injuries piled up, made a cool run in the bubble where Damian Lillard won bubble MVP, which I think absolutely should be on Damian Lillard's resume when he goes into the Hall of Fame. It's NBA bubble MVP. And they got bounced by the Lakers, even though they won a cool game one against the Lakers, bounced right away. And guess which group has been together that entire time from 2013 when Damian Lillard was drafted, 2012 when Lillard was drafted, 2013 when CJ McCollum was drafted, and 2014 when they finally won. Damian Lillard, CJ McCollum, Terry Stotts. They've been together the entire run. Stotts was hired in 2012, has been the coach ever since. 9 seasons. 9 seasons of Terry Stotts as the head coach of the Blazers. But those three have been together 9 years, and now Stotts is the one who's going to get fired, which is a signal that after 9 seasons, they're ready to go all in. Maybe they weren't ready when Anthony Davis was available. Maybe they didn't have the capacity to get James Harden or weren't even interested in trying to get James Harden. But as injuries pile up on CJ McCollum, and Yusuf Nurkic has a second consecutive season with an injury, not as catastrophic as the year before where he missed the entire playoff run with an injury. As the Blazers get closer and closer towards the reality that their window is slammed shut because they were an 8 seed last year. They're looking like a 7 seed this year. They're going to have to play the play-in round for a second year in a row just to make it to the first round and get smacked around by Phoenix or Clippers or Utah or whatever it's going to be. Maybe they can beat Utah. Maybe they can pull the upset against Utah or Phoenix and get to the second round. But the Blazers are a second-round exit team. That's the big thing that I want to drive home. The Blazers' goal is to get bounced in the second round. That's what they can hope for as a best-case scenario, is to get bounced in the second round. I think they can do it. I think they can pull an upset against a Portland. A Portland could pull an upset against another second-round exit team, like the Nuggets, but they won't get a chance to play, like Phoenix and like Utah. I think they could pull an upset against one of those teams. But if they don't and they get bounced in the first round, this season goes down as a bit of a disappointment for Portland. And if this season goes down as a disappointment, after last year went down as a disappointment, and now they're ready to fire Terry Stotts, Portland might be ready to go all in. And that is an important distinction to pay attention to, that Portland is ready to go all in, because the next time a Bradley Beal becomes available, a Steph Curry becomes available, and Steph Curry would do it because the Warriors will probably placate where he gets to go, look for Portland to be finally ready. After I said they should have gone all in with Anthony Davis, they should have gone all in with James Harden, Portland might finally be ready to go all in. Chelsea, ladies and gentlemen, has officially won. They head to the 5th minute of extra time. They are officially going to the Champions League final. This is the cool thing about soccer, is that you always know exactly when soccer is going to end so that you can time it up perfectly with the end of your radio show. Because isn't that a cool thing when just the perfect transitions end when they do? Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for stopping into the Take It Easy radio show here on Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash. Thank you to everyone who stopped in on YouTube as well. I've already stopped the YouTube live stream so people can't actually see us on YouTube anymore. But thanks again to everyone who continues to support our work. Thanks to everyone who's tuning in from the podcast. Shout out to everyone who's been supporting us over the past few days. We've got ridiculous podcasting number boosts over the last few days, so the support is heard, people. We're getting close to 75,000 downloads on that podcast, and it makes me feel good to see those numbers keep going up and up and up. So thank you so much to everyone. Thanks to Martez. I hope he's listening to this one because it was a good show today. Thanks to everyone who stopped in all throughout the week here on Take It Easy and on all the great radio shows over on Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash. So with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, take it easy. We'll talk to you again.